Hello everyone, welcome again to the Association for the Cricket Podcast. We've got the T20 qualifiers coming up, and this is our preview show, and with me for that is Andrew Nixon, as always. Hi Andrew.
Hi Russ, hi everybody.
And we're very pleased to have back with us after a bit of a gap, USA's premier journalist for cricket, and someone who will also be able to talk with us about the recent events of the ICC meeting and the USACA suspension, Peter Della Penna. Hi Penna.
Hi guys, thanks for having me back on.
We'll start with Group A, and I'm going to do these in just a seated order, but you guys can tell me where you think they'll finish. The first team in that list is Ireland. Where do you see them? Their strengths, obviously, they're batting these days.
I certainly agree with that. The bowling, as we saw in the T20 series recently against Scotland, can be a little ropey at times. It's very sort of one paced, really. There's no sort of out and out pace bowlers, and then after the medium paces, it's just the spinners. But on Irish wickets, that could perhaps be okay. But obviously, the batting, you'll be looking at the likes of Kevin O'Brien to succeed. But that bowling is a bit threadbare, really.
I think this series against Scotland recently just showed the lack of depth that they have and how overly dependent Ireland is on players like Porterfield and Sterling, and it's going to be crucial for them to perform. And obviously, it's a big boost for them coming back for this tournament, but they did show some vulnerabilities in that series against Scotland that were exploited a bit.
Yeah, the key for me, I think, will probably be George Dockrell. He seems to be someone who's been out of form, and maybe Young as well, as he's coming into the side having not played in the World Cup, because if those two have good tournament, I don't think they'll have any issues. But otherwise, without Murtagh, the bowling looks so thin recently, and they've been going for 10 and over with some of their fist bowlers, which is going to be a real problem. I think certainly looking back at the World 2020, where the Netherlands took to them, at some point in this tournament, we're going to see them just get absolutely taken to the cleaners.
I think a team like, you know, Papua New Guinea, they've shown in the very recent past, you have a guy like Asad Valla or Liga Sayaka, who in a game against Ireland 2020 format, those guys are super aggressive and explosive, and against kind of a one-paced, just general gentle medium pace attack like Ireland has now, where they don't have anybody who's out and out quick. Ireland's attack has become very similar to a team like Netherlands, whose, you know, bowlers can go for 4 overs, 35 or 40 runs. So if you get Legas Ayakara and Asad Valla against that Ireland attack, you could see PNG put up 180, 190 easily and string an upset against the hosts.
Andrew, the case for you for Ireland?
As I say, the batting, you know, the bowling isn't going to get teams out cheaper, so they need to make sure that they get big scores. So it would be the batting, especially from Sterling and Kevin O'Brien.
I guess the ceiling is in what they'd expect. They really hope to win. They're at home still. They probably expect to win.
Yeah, they'll certainly be aiming to win. They could miss out topping the group, depending on how they go. They might have to get through the playoffs to qualify, and then obviously they've got the semi-finals and final. But your home territory can still count for a lot, and your Irish wickets, you know, a lot of the teams aren't used to playing on them, so you know, Ireland, you know, still have a chance despite that bowling weakness.
What's their flaw, Peter? Can you see them missing the tournament altogether?
No, I wouldn't go that far. But yeah, they have, I think, just the bowling aspects. Again, the batting side, you've got more than enough options with Balbirnie and Niall O'Brien still, and Kevin O'Brien, obviously. And just they have, in terms of 1-6 or 1-7, in terms of their batting lineup, they probably have the best set lineup amongst any team in this tournament. But the thing that brings them back to the pack is that lack of an explosive, just game-changing pace bowler.
Moving on to the next team, Nepal. Andrew, the strengths?
Again, very, very much one pace bowling attack, with the exception of Sompal Karmi. I think he'll be a key with the ball. I think it's Nepal's spin bowlers who are their strength. They can be very economical, and And as we saw in the World 2020 last year with Shakti Ghosh, and you know, didn't ball a single wide or no ball in the whole tournament. So yeah, those spinners I think will be the key for Nepal.
And Peter?
No, definitely. I think even though Ireland and just British conditions in general have a reputation for assisting seam bowlers, there's still a great amount of success to be had for spinners. So if you have a team like Nepal whose strength is their spinners, there's no reason to get away from that. So somebody like, yeah, Shakti Gaujan and Basant Regmi, the other left-arm spinner, both of them have been proven performers over the last 5-6 years, and they should figure to be very important in Nepal's success in this tournament.
In the past, they've been incredibly dependent on Paris Kakka. Is that still the case, do you think?
I think he's definitely still the spine of their batting unit and the spine of the team in general. He does everything. In addition to bowling medium pace, he can come on bowl off spin. He bats in the middle order. He's a very aggressive fielder. So he's their main catalyst for just driving the team. He's the engine of the team. But you have, you know, somebody like, I think, is one of the most exciting batsmen in associate cricket, in Gayana Jamala, who's vice captain of the team and comes in down in around 3 or 4. He's somebody who, if Nepal, you know, gets some games on TV in this tournament, he's somebody that is very aesthetically pleasing and is a major contributor to their batting success as well.
Yeah, I think they've certainly moved on from the past where it was a case, if you got Paris Kadkar out, you got the rest of the team out pretty cheaply, and the other players seem to have brought on the batting a lot in recent years.
The other key for me for Nepal is that their start is against USA and Namibia, and they are known a little bit as slow starters. I feel that if they stuff those two games up, this is a disastrous tournament for them, because every game after that is hard. But if they can get out of those first two games, they might do reasonably well.
Well, and conversely, USA is a team that, based on talent alone, they need to catch people by surprise early. If you let a team get going in a tournament, once they get into full swing of things, USA has trouble catching up. Their best chance to cause an upset is when a team still hasn't really got going yet. So that could be a match where USA is vulnerable, or Nepal is vulnerable, versus if it was on the flip side, if that Nepal-USA game was the seventh game of sixth or seventh game of the group stage, then you'd automatically mark down Nepal as favorites. But yeah, you're absolutely right that the way the scheduling has worked out, Nepal could find themselves a little bit vulnerable.
Nepal's ceiling, can they win the group?
I think they can get close. I'm not sure they could win it. I think they'll certainly make the playoffs. I don't think there's any doubt about that. I can't see them missing those. But actually winning the group could be a little tricky, especially if they get off to a slow start, as we were just saying there.
And Peter?
I think I would pencil them in no lower than fourth. I think they're safe in terms of advancing to the playoff stage. I don't know how well they'll adjust to the local conditions, though. I can see them finishing as high as second, but I don't think they can contend to win the group.
It's worth just looking at the group now. It seems to me to be a really interesting group, because it's got a lot of these young teams that haven't played a lot of tournaments, Nepal, but also Hong Kong, PNG, and Namibia. So it's probably the weaker of the two groups.
Yeah, I think you could certainly make a case for most of the qualifiers coming from Group B rather than Group A. There's a lot of, sort of, as you say, young teams and up-and-coming teams in this group. So, yeah, it's definitely the weaker of the two groups.
The next team on my list is Hong Kong. Their strengths are, again, that they are that young team, and they can have really, really good days to me, but they can be a bit inconsistent as well.
I think they've got a good amount of energy and a good amount of planning as well. Their administration is a serious help to them in the fact that they've gone on a tour to the south of England. They're playing warm-up matches in Sussex, and I've made an effort to really give their players the best opportunity to succeed by getting them over a little bit earlier than most of the other teams, that will aid their chances of success greatly in this tournament. And in terms of just the composition of the team, they're young, they're raw, but they've got some highly, highly skilled players, especially in the pace bowling department, which a lot of other teams don't have, including Ireland. If you take a look at somebody like Irfan Ahmed or Azaz Khan, you know, those guys can bowl 135, 140, even touching 145 sometimes, kilometers per hour. And most associate players aren't used to facing pace bowling like that. So their consistency, they struggle with at times. But in terms of just bringing something different that other teams aren't used to seeing or exposed to, Hong Kong does have a bit of that X factor.
Yeah, and obviously Irfan Ahmed, he's a talented bowler as well. He's also a talented batsman. You know, as long as he doesn't get out for a duck, he tends to get a big score, and you know, he will certainly be key for them in this tournament.
The other person who might be interesting to see how he's going is Jamie Atkinson. He was injured in his kitchen, I think it was, and had to have surgery relatively recently, so he's probably not out of form, but he's a pretty important player in the middle order.
Jamie Atkinson, definitely, and another one I'd mark down who has been in and out of the team more due to, I think, university and school commitments is Mark Chapman, 21-year-old. He's a left-handed batsman and all-rounder. He's a phenomenal athlete. He looks young. He looks like he's about 16 instead of 21. But when he's on the field, he plays well beyond his years. And he's somebody who, when he's been out of the Hong Kong lineup, they've struggled. But when he's come back and is in that starting 11, he adds an added dimension as, again, a very talented all-rounder that few teams really have access to in their squads. And that's, again, an X factor. That middle order with Chapman and Jamie Atkinson will go a long way towards determining how well Hong Kong does, I think, in this tournament.
Their ceiling and their floor, guys, can they win the group? Will they miss the playoffs?
I think Hong Kong are certainly capable of winning the group. A lot will depend on those games against the likes of Ireland and Nepal. But, yeah, they're certainly capable of winning the group. And I can't see them missing the playoffs either.
I'm a bit have a mixed view on this. I certainly agree with Andrew that they're definitely capable of winning the group. However, I think they're also capable of finishing outside the playoff positions. If you look at their consistency, going back to say the World 2020 last year in 2014, they got absolutely stomped on by Nepal, and then a couple days later they come back and beat Bangladesh. So they're definitely a bit of a Jekyll and Hyde outfit that when they put everything together, they are phenomenal. And you think, wow, these guys are really special. And then some days they show up and they're just dreadful. And you think, what happened? Is this the same team? So there's definitely the capacity for them to possibly finish ahead of Ireland in the group standings. But they're also a team that if they're not focused, they are vulnerable.
Another team that possibly would also fit that description, I guess, fits into the description of this group generally being young and somewhat inconsistent teams, is Papua New Guinea. They're an incredibly exciting team, but maybe not always on.
They're missing the experience of Geraint Jones for this tournament as well, who I think, whilst not always the top scorer, did help sort of hold the innings together occasionally and perhaps rein in some of their more aggressive instincts. Struggling. He's got his commitments with Gloucestershire. As you say, they're very hit and miss. As we saw against the Netherlands in the World Cricket League Championship recently, if their batsmen can get in, especially Siaka and Asad Vala, they can get a big score. But if they don't, then they can sometimes struggle, and then the bowling can often let them down as well.
The absence of Geraint Jones, I think, will be more felt in matches where the toss is crucial. If you've got a toss where you've got overcast conditions and the team gets put in first to bat that doesn't want to really have to deal with the swinging ball, I think those are the times when Geraint Jones, his absence will be really a problem for Papua New Guinea. On some of the matches where they're some of the the flatter tracks are some of the better batting tracks and just clearer conditions. The team that's set up the way it is right now, they won't have too many difficulties. And in some of the matches where he's even been involved in the team, there's been quite a few times where he just they've won without anything meaningful coming from him. Even if you think back to their first kind of multi-day match after the two ODIs they played against Hong Kong last year in Australia, I think it was either everybody in the top seven or seven out of the top eight had scored 50-plus in the first innings of the three-day game except Garrett Jones. So he's not a prerequisite for success, but in some of those kind of testing conditions, I think that's where they'll be vulnerable without him.
Yeah, the key for me will be Legasiaka at the top of the order, and then again Asad Vala coming in as well slightly after that, because if those two have a big tournament, they'll score so heavily they'll beat most teams just purely on the amount of runs they'll make. But again, as you say, if the ball's moving around, and they don't necessarily have a huge amount of experience on turf pitches, they might find themselves 5 for 40 and really struggling, because their bowling probably isn't going to be able to win in a lot of games.
Yeah, and there's a lack of experience in European conditions. I think the games in the Netherlands last week, the first time they've played in Europe since I think 1990, and I don't think they've ever played in Ireland. So a lack of experience in those conditions could well be a factor for them.
The one thing that they do have going for them from that regard, at the men's level, they certainly haven't faced those kinds of conditions, but some of these players in the team that are in the men's team now were part of the under-19 squad in 2011 when they competed at the under-19 World Cup qualifier in Ireland. So they do have a little bit of experience, but it's not extensive, say, compared to some of the other locally based teams. But, compared to, say, USA or, some of the other kind of newer teams, newer players, even a team like UAE, their guys are not players who get an awful lot of opportunities, or Oman either, even though Oman's playing in Scotland in the other group. But those kinds of teams will probably have some issues. But some of the Papua New Guinea guys who toured would have been 4 years ago now. They have a little bit of that experience to draw on.
And in terms of results, I can think they're a bit like Hong Kong. I can see them winning the group potentially if they get a real run on, but potentially also missing the playoffs if things go really badly.
Yeah, it'll be very much as it was in the last World 2020 qualifier, where it sort of came down to one or two games that could have gone either way, and that caused them to miss out last time. And I think it'll be very much the same this time as well.
I think they can finish, I would say, as high as third. I think they're pretty firm in that 3-4 position. I don't think they'll miss out, and they could challenge as high as two, I think. But I would say that a team like Hong Kong is much more vulnerable to dropping down out of those playoff positions than Papua New Guinea. I think Papua New Guinea is kind of firmly in the middle of the pack.
The team that's fifth on this list is a team that's actually had quite a number of very good tournaments in World 2020 qualifiers. They were really close to making it 4 years ago, to had a bit worse of a tournament last time. But Namibia's, they're known for having a really long list of batsmen and all-rounders and batting really down to 11, and I guess that's still their strength.
This does seem to be a fielding a team of almost entirely all-rounders. Again, I think their batting is certainly their strength. Jerry Snyman, who I think missed the last tournament, is back in for this event. But you're missing Christy Vilhoun and a couple of other players who have played in recent years who have tended to score a lot of runs in 2020 cricket. So they're perhaps not as good as they have been in the past, but they're still a very useful side, and their bowling attack is probably one of the best in the group, to be honest.
Absolutely, I would agree with that. They're not overly quick, but they're very skilled at moving the ball off the seam, and their attack, for that reason, is suited to the conditions. If you take a look at somebody who's kind of a younger talent like Christopher Kumbe. You've got Craig Williams, Louis Kazinga, all these guys are those kind of 125, 130 mile an hour bowlers who can cause problems for lesser experienced teams. And kind of similar to Papua New Guinea, you have quite a few guys who toured with the under-19s back in 2011. You have Gerhard Rasmus, who I think is a very exciting young up-and-coming batsman. Jason Davidson and Kumbe, Stefan Bard, Shivago Gronewald, who's one of my favorite names in associate cricket. Yeah, all those guys came and did well at the qualifiers in Ireland back in 2011 at the under-19 level. So you add that with the experience of guys like Simon and Raymond Van Schoor, who was the MVP, the player of the tournament at the qualifier in 2012. They've got a very well-balanced team.
The ceiling for Namibia, can they win this group? They won it, obviously, 4 years ago.
I think they'll struggle a little bit this time around in terms of reaching those kind of fights, and a large part of that was their success back in 2012 was down to Ben Roosthuizen and the tournament he had, where he was just knocking the cover off the ball left, right, and center. And he got a lot of support from guys like Van Schoor, who, even though he wasn't as explosive, he was just a churning out runs and wound up being the player of that tournament. They could finish in the top four of the group. They'll have to work hard for it, though. But they don't have the holes in their squad from top to bottom like Nepal does. Nepal doesn't have quite the depth that Namibia does. And if Namibia can keep more of an even-keeled performance day in and day out, I think they'll have a decent enough chance to make the playoff positions.
I think I'd certainly agree with that. I think sort of third or fourth is perhaps their peak, but I could also see them missing out as well. It could depend how it goes in maybe one or two key matches.
The sixth team in the group, the United States, Peter, there's been a lot of changes in this side from the last time, from what I can tell. You might have to take us through it.
Well, it's your regular veritable cornucopia of players just kind of mashed together and gonna arrive in Ireland and hope to pull off a miracle. Yeah, there's not as much chopping and changing as in the past, but still enough to present challenges in terms of just making sure everybody knows their roles and just having good chemistry and being able to perform at optimal levels, which has always been a problem, just getting guys together and knowing who each other are. I mean, I spoke to one player in the last week who basically said the first time he met some of these guys who were his teammates was in Indianapolis at the last qualifier, that they literally don't know who each other are and they don't practice with each other. So, yeah, some of the changes, the biggest change, Stephen Taylor, which is a massive blow for the team. He's not just their best player, but he's one of the best players in associate cricket and or the most dangerous players in associate cricket, just the physical talents he has and how hard he hits the ball. Very few teams have that, and for him to drop out after obtaining a CBL contract is just a gigantic hole in the U.S. team that he leaves. And coming in, you have former U.S. Under-19 captain Shiva Vashisht, who will be making his senior team debut tour coming to Ireland for this tournament. You've got Nasir Jamali, who's a left-arm quick bowler, coming into the squad. He did not appear in Indianapolis. You have Alex Amsterdam, who is a bit of a wild card. You don't know if he's going to be in the opening day lineup, but if he does get a chance, he has a reputation in New York City for being quite an explosive batsman. And Timothy Suresbali was named as the replacement player for Stephen Taylor, and he was a bit of an odd choice, I have to say. He did turn in one big score in the semifinal of the USAC National Tournament back in April, but in the opportunities he has had with the U.S. team, he's not done very well at all. He's an opening batsman, generally speaking, but he kind of struggles against the moving ball. He's very poor against spin, and he's not the best fielder either. So it was kind of an odd choice to bring him in after his earlier struggles at the national or international level with the USA team. On the plus side, though, even though they're without Taylor, Timo Patel was fantastic as a leg spinner and wicket taker in Indianapolis. He brings a tremendous amount of experience. He's a former first-class Ranji Trophy player in India for Gujarat. And you also have a few other guys, the likes of Fahad Babar, who was the MVP of the tournament in Indianapolis, who's emerged as a very exciting prospect on the batting side for USA. So they're a bit young, they're a bit raw, they're definitely going to miss Stephen Taylor, but again, USA on their day, they've got the talent to compete for a playoff spot. It's just a matter of getting guys, knowing the roles and having chemistry, and something that they've obviously lacked without the proper administrative support coming through from USACA.
The other name that looks a bit of key is Mohammed Ghous as the captain. Is it a role that he's going to fill well, do you think?
He was a bit of a left-field choice as captain, replacing Steve Messiah when the team was announced for Indianapolis. And if Jaypin Patel had been available for that tournament, I would have thought he would have been the favorite option, either Jaypin Patel or Timo Patel, with all of his first-class experience and just general domestic experience in and around USA at various tournaments. But they went with Gauss. He's, even though he's young, he's played a lot of matches for USA, so he's experienced from that standpoint. And he's somebody who, statistically, in the last year or so, he's kind of gone backwards slightly. But for whatever reason, when you put him in a pressure situation, he's somebody who responds very, very well. And when matches get tight and matches get tense, he's somebody who you want the ball in his hands because he never gets phased. And you saw some of that in Indianapolis in the matches that I was at, that in certain situations where the team was kind of on the back foot at times, he would come on and he doesn't do anything fancy. He's an off spinner who just basically darts the ball in flat, but he's very tight, very economical, bowls stump to stump line. He's very hard to get away, and his pacing in between deliveries, he bowls his overs in a minute and a half. I mean, he's just always on top of the batsman and doesn't give them time to get ready and to just get comfortable against him. So from that standpoint, he is a key player. You know, if he does well, it means he's confident, and by extension, the team will feed off that confidence if they see their captain performing that way.
They're, as usual, a little bit difficult to predict as well. I can see them getting as high as third or fourth if everything really went well. They've certainly got the talent for it, but I can see the US, if not being winless, at least only getting some sort of consolation win at the end. Is that a fair reflection, do you think?
I think a part of it comes down to scheduling. We touched on it before with Nepal, but they need to get early momentum. If they get confidence out of their, you know, if two out of those first three games, Nepal has had a very good rivalry with the U.S. in the last 5, 6, 7 years. But at the 2020 level, Nepal doesn't have those explosive batsmen that USA does. USA has got some very physical big hitters and who can score quickly, and they're much better matchup in the T20 format with Nepal than they are in the 50-over format as a result of that. And then again, in that third game, USA plays Namibia. Same thing. These bowlers are not intimidating, but they're disciplined. And USA kind of, in a 50-over game against Namibia, favored Namibia every time because USA's batsmen just aren't disciplined enough. But in a shorter game where they're more explosive in a ground where you might have smaller boundaries, USA could definitely win that game. And if they win two out of those first three, I don't expect them to beat Ireland. I don't think anybody does. But you come away with a 2-1 record after those first three games. You got Jersey, who I think most people would agree is the weakest team in the group. if they can win that game, they're 3-1. They're riding high, and you never know what could happen against, you know, Hong Kong and Papua New Guinea. So the way the scheduling has come out for USA, it's definitely something that is bounced in their favor, and they need to capitalize on that. They need to win that first game, and if they can win that first game, they'll be feeling good about themselves, and that will carry forward. If they don't win that first game against Nepal, I could easily see them going 1-5, or very well possible that they could be winless. They could even lose to a team like Jersey. So that first game is going to be crucial.
Moving on to Jersey, then. This is their first foray into this level, and I think that'll probably be their biggest challenge, is trying to step up to teams that are of this caliber. But they are pretty young and exciting side. A couple of really good batsmen in Jonty Jenner and Ben Stevens. And if those two do well, and you know, they might be able to challenge a few of these teams.
Yeah, long-time listeners of the podcast will know I've been tipping Jonty Jenner for big things for about 2 years now. This is his chance to shine. Obviously, these are teams ranked quite a bit above them, but you know, Jersey have played some of these teams in recent years. They were sort of travelling up and up the World Cricket League initially with Afghanistan, and then been in the same divisions a lot with USA and Nepal over the years. They all started in the same division back in 2008, people may remember. So it's not as if they've not played against these teams, and they've beaten some of these teams. So, but obviously that was in the 50-over format rather than the 2020 format. But as you say, I think there's those two very talented batsmen. I think if they can score, and there's Peter Goff as well, who on his day can put on a big score. So, but again, I think it was similar to Ireland. Their bowling can leave a lot to be desired.
I think they're bowling on the bowling side. They're a team who possesses a lot of just kind of gentle medium pacers, just guys who are touching 120, 125. But again, because they're in local conditions, they do have some skill in terms of moving the ball around, and they as a result of that, I think that's one thing that is probably the thing they need to exploit most in coming up against a team like a Hong Kong or a Nepal or a Papua New Guinea, that they've got experience in local conditions. They do have experience playing against some of these teams, and even though it was 7 years ago now, it is worth keeping in mind that in kind of home conditions, British conditions, British Isle conditions in 2008, that they went to the final of that tournament. They beat USA in the semifinals. They went up against Afghanistan in the final. So they finished ahead of Nepal in that event. They're kind of in the same territory as where they were, at least with Papua New Guinea in terms of that kind of standing. And they're not gonna be a team that's gonna put up 180, 190 scores hardly. If they're gonna win games, they're gonna need to win kind of games in the 130, 140 range, just kind of put up a fighting total and then count on the bowlers to just use their experience to outsmart the opposition. But if the chips fall their way, they could threaten for a playoff spot.
Yeah, and today as we're recording this, they've beaten Kenya in a warm-up game, and without Jonty Jenner as well. It was Ben Stevens who did the damage. He scored 64 from 40 balls. So, they are capable of beating some of the sort of second-tier associates, I suppose you'd say. So, if things go their way, then they could well find themselves challenging for a playoff spot. But I think it'll be a tough ask. I think you'd be looking at them finishing probably fifth or sixth in the group.
I think realistically, I've got them marked down for seventh. I can't see them finishing in the playoff positions. But again, if the chips fall right, if they win a couple of key tosses, if it comes down to that, in a shortened game, if Duckworth Lewis comes into play, those kind of things could be happening throughout this tournament, then it's conceivable that they could push for a playoff spot, but there's no way they're going to challenge for a top two or top three position.
looking at who's going to place where, first and then the second and third spot and then that fourth playoff spot, we assume that Ireland is going to win the group?
Yeah, I think that's the most likely outcome, as long as we were saying that their bowling can prevent and it doesn't slip up at all. So, yeah, I think Ireland are going to win the group.
I've got Hong Kong and PNG down for second and third. You guys?
Been reading my notes. Did you hack my email, Russ? That's what I've got them down for as well. I think Hong Kong, with their pace bowling, I think I would have them penciled in for second unless they really have some major batting collapses. That's those pace bowlers and then just the bowling attack in general, I think, is well suited to set them up for finishing in the second position. And then Papua New Guinea, I've got them down for third as well.
I actually had Nepal down for third, but I had Hong Kong second as well. I have Nepal down in fourth place. That's going to be the next question. Sorry, I have Papua New Guinea down in fourth place.
That was my question. I tossing up on the fourth place, I assume going to come between Nepal and Namibia. I think Nepal might just edge it, just on the basis that they've played more of these matches recently. But that's going to be a key fixture. Peter?
I think a good portion of kind of evaluating Nepal on how well they might do is seeing how they do in the four-match 2020 series they've got against the Netherlands right up in the lead-up to this tournament. But at the moment, yeah, I would pencil them in for fourth ahead of Namibia. Another thing that is in their favor is not just these four matches against the Netherlands, but they may have had the best preparation out of really any of the kind of associate teams outside the top six ODI nations, that they were set up in India for a training camp that has been going on for most of the month, from what I know in June, that they have a great amount of administrative support and sponsors of support that has assisted their development overall, and it's no different in the lead-up to this tournament. So I think that could be the deciding factor in terms of getting them into those top four playoff positions and putting them ahead of Namibia.
I must say, Russ, it's a brave man who raises the possibility of Nepal not getting to the playoffs. we'll be getting complaints.
I'm skipping the country in a week. Moving on to Group B, we'll start obviously with Afghanistan. They've been an outstanding team for a long time. The question marks over them, I guess, come down to actually that some of their players aren't starting to get on in years a little bit. And although they've brought back Mohammad Shahzad for this tournament, the form of Mohammad Nabi and a couple of other players hasn't been great moving into the in the last kind of year or so.
The form has been a little bit ropey. We saw in the World Cup that they, other than the game against Scotland, they didn't really do all that much. Mohammed Shahzad coming back into the team after, I think, about a year out now. I don't think he's played since the World 2020 last year, and he was well out of form and quite unfit as well. So it'd be interesting to see how he goes. A lot depends for them on the bowling. Hamid Hassan is in the team, but again, you know, there's always question marks about just how fit he is. And then, you know, Shapur Zadran is probably their best bowler, and then, you know, Daulat Zadran, they've probably got the best bowling attack in the whole tournament, but a lot will depend on their batting, which, as we know from the past, can be inconsistent at the best of times.
I'm curious to see just how Mohammad Shahzad will respond and come back. I think Andy Moles, when he became Afghanistan coach ahead of the World Cup this past February in March, made a big point of emphasis on the fitness and just improving the fitness standards in the team overall. And one of the casualties that was Mohammad Shahzad. So is he coming back as a fitter player? And what did that do to his confidence? Did it spur him on to want to become a bigger, better, just more focused player, or did it put a dent in his ego a little bit? You know, he was a very explosive player over the last couple of years in associate cricket and in T20 cricket in general, but how will he perform after being left out of the most iconic tournament there is in cricket, and as an opportunity for Afghanistan to make their debut in the tournament. He's been one of the kind of torchbearers on the batting side for the team, and he wasn't able to participate. So as a sort of a comeback tournament for him, I think he's going to have a spotlight on him from that standpoint.
The key player for me, I think, given his recent both at bat with the bat and the ball, is probably going to be Shenhua. I've seen he's was the key player when they beat Scotland and in the World Cup, and he was very important in the last World 2020 qualifiers as well with his bowling. So if he has a good tournament, it's hard to see them doing badly. It's hard to see them doing badly generally with their bowling, but he's been the player that's held things together when they've collapsed at the top.
I think especially in terms of his bowling, he's probably one of the best spinners in associate cricket. It could do with stopping the appealing from your cover after he thinks he's taken a wicket. And his batting as well he can be explosive, but he isn't the sort of player who tends to get out cheaply as some of the other explosive Afghan batsmen tend to. So yeah, he's a very, very much a key player for them.
Their performance, obviously they could win the group. How low can they fall if things don't go their way?
If things don't go their way, I don't see them really falling much lower than third. I certainly think they're a lock for the playoffs, and winning the group, I don't think they'll expect anything less than winning the group, to be honest.
Yeah, the only two teams I could see that would jump over them into the top two would be Netherlands and Scotland. Other than that, I would put Afghanistan into the top slot, but I can't imagine them finishing anywhere below third.
It's possibly a brave man that bets against the UAE beating Afghanistan, but UAE losing to Afghanistan, rather.
Well, that's 50 over cricket. This is 2020, so...
That's the team that's second on the list, the UAE. Obviously, their most important thing is experience, but they've just lost their most experienced player right before the tournament. So it'll be very interesting to see how they go.
Yeah, I think that second seeding flatters the UAE a little bit. They've got that second seeding on the back of playing in Asian conditions that they're very familiar with, now moving to European conditions that they're very unfamiliar with, as we saw in the Intercontinental Cup game against Ireland, and then in the World Cricket League Championship games against Kenya recently. So I think they're gonna struggle in this tournament. I think they might just edge into the playoffs, but I don't think they're certainly not gonna be finishing second in the group. Shaiman Anwar is probably their key in the absence of Kurram Khan, but beyond him, you don't really see too much in that batting lineup.
You know, they did do well outside of the subcontinental conditions or Asian conditions, local conditions, at the World Cup qualifier in New Zealand. But their top performer in that event was Kurram Khan. So they've proven that they can do well as a team in New Zealand in kind of foreign conditions than what they're most accustomed to. But the big factor is the subtraction of Kurram in his retirement. How will the team perform in foreign conditions without his leadership and his just weight of runs that he's scored for the team? That to me is going to be something to keep an eye on.
Their bowling did better than expected in the World Cup, their pace bowling, which is a good sign, but on the other hand, they did split those games against Kenya, so they're probably teetering on whether they'll make the playoffs. What's their ceiling? Can they get the second and third spot still? Could they be able to roll over one of the Netherlands or Afghanistan or Scotland?
I think they're capable of finishing third, but I think most likely they're looking at that fourth place. But again, they could well just miss out on that. I suppose like Papua New Guinea and Nepal and the other group, it could come down to just one game, whether they actually get into those playoffs or not.
I think it's going to come down to their batting. I mean, their bowling, they showed in the World Cup that there's pace bowling and the seam bowling is more than up to standard. I think they're sometimes unfairly stereotyped as a team that's just a team centered around spinning and their spinners, and they've got quite a few left-arm spinners, and Mohammad Taqir is the captain, is an off-spinner that proven in the World Cup. But their batting, outside of Kurram, outside of Shaman Anwar, and to a lesser extent Swapnil Patil, they have not demonstrated on a consistent basis that, you know, they can stand up to the competition. And I'm curious to see how they will perform in Ireland in 2020 format from that standpoint.
The third seed in this group is the Netherlands. They're the most accomplished associate team of the World 2020 last year. That squad's pretty much the same going into this tournament, so you'd have to think that they'll do well. They do occasionally have odd matches, and we saw that in the World Cup qualifiers, though. So you'd assume that they'll do well, but you never quite know.
It depends which Dutch team turn up, but you know, they were a very, very talented side, probably one of the most consistent sides in the tournament. Some new players come through. Max O'Dowd has come through in recent years, and just a year, in fact. They're missing, I think, Logan Van Beek from the World 2020 last year, who bowled very well against England. But you know, they're a very very talented side. Hassan Malik with the ball and Tim van der Gooten with the ball. You know, Tim van der Gooten has a bit of pace to him. So again, as with, you know, the Afghan team, it's something, and the Hong Kong team, it's something that associate batsmen aren't too used to. And then the batting, you know, we all know what Stefan Meiberg can do.
You know, they're a team that you generally know what you're going to get out of them. They're not going to be somebody like Afghanistan, who's prone to collapsing for 90 just out of nowhere. Netherlands, you're always going to get, in this kind of competition, they're going to be scoring 140, 150 every game. And if somebody like Stefan Meiberg comes off at the top of the order, you know, they're going to be pushing 180 and 190 in some games. They're never going to be falling short or embarrassing themselves and just kind of tripping up. So from that standpoint, you can always be guaranteed that even though they're not flashy, they're not they don't have you know, blockbuster box office names in their team, they always do well.
The one player that is missing from the World 2020 last year that is Tom Cooper, and he was fairly important for them in that tournament. So, but given the drop down in standard, it shouldn't make that big a difference.
Yeah, unless they can find a way to get him into the squad for this this tournament, of course, at the last minute. You know, somebody's got a dodgy back, and you know, all of a sudden Tom Cooper becomes available. Not that I'm making any accusations, of course. But yeah, he will be missed. But you know, they've played well without him since then. So perhaps, you know, he adds something to the team, but he certainly is somebody who the team is built around.
In terms of performance, I have to think that they could win the group. Is it possible they'll miss the playoffs?
I don't think it is possible they'd miss the playoffs. Winning the group is certainly a possibility, but I'd certainly expect to finish in sort of that second, third sort of spot.
I agree. I think it's virtually impossible to envision them slipping out of the playoff spots. This isn't. I'm not expecting a slip up like they had against Kenya at the end of the group stage of the 2014 qualifier down in New Zealand for the 50-over World Cup. I think you can pencil them in for definitely top three spot.
They're seated fourth in this because they missed the World 2020 last time, but they're not a team I can see doing so again. They actually really are probably the form team of associate cricket right now, and that's Scotland. And again, home advantage is going to be important, but they've got a really good squad get together, it seems now.
Yeah, they're missing Matt Macon. Unfortunately, he's not been released by his counter. We keep hearing that a lot, so much for the mandatory release rules. But they do have Kyle Kurtzer available after a little bit of a misunderstanding between the two, so I think he'll be a very, very key player for them. He's got some experience from playing county cricket. And then, you know, Callum McLeod on his day can score very quickly, especially against weak bowling attacks. But I think, to some extent, like Ireland, the bowling can perhaps let Scotland down. Josh Davey is a good bowler, but beyond him, there's not much to write home about in that bowling attack.
Scotland team right now kind of reminds me of the way that Namibia was coming together ahead of the 2012 qualifier. If some observers will recall that ahead of that tournament, Namibia had played a series of matches against Kenya, and they just annihilated them in a few of those games. And that was when Vender Westhuizen was in top form, and he turned in a couple of massive scores against Kenya and then came into the qualifier in the UA and put up a century against Scotland. And you know, they ran through group play and very nearly qualified for the tournament itself. So from that standpoint, I think Scotland is in a kind of a similar position, that they've really shown how much they've developed and how formidable they are against Ireland, even though it was a depleted Ireland team. This is a really good squad, and you know, as Andrew mentioned, you've got a guy like Callum McLeod at the top of the order. You know, guys like Richie Barrington, Kutzer, they've got a very good nucleus that in home conditions will be competing for the top spot in the group.
With that in mind, I can't see them being below third, and that would probably involve two unusual games. They'd probably come second or first. Is that a fair indication for you guys as well?
Yeah, I think they're looking at sort of second or third, and perhaps an outside chance at first. Yeah, I don't see them finishing any lower than that.
I could see them finishing first. I think they definitely won't go below third. But you know, Afghanistan, if you look at the 2013 qualifier in their opening game against Netherlands, Afghanistan was bowled out for 90, and Netherlands chased that down inside of 13 overs. So, you know, Afghanistan has always been a team that, for all their glory, they do have kind of the odd stinker here and there. And Scotland is a team that's definitely capable of beating them, and if they can do that, there's a chance they could top the group.
Fifth seed is Canada. Again, this is a team that seems to be turning itself over a little bit. Peter, you saw them in Indianapolis. Are they well placed for this tournament?
I think a good portion of that depends on the preparation that they've had in between Indianapolis and now, which hasn't been a whole lot. One of the things that helps them is that a good portion of the players are based in and around Toronto, so they get to play together from that standpoint. But you've got some guys spread around the country in places like Calgary and Vancouver, so they have some of the same issues as the USA in terms of getting together and playing practice matches together and building chemistry. Having said that, they were comfortably the best team in Indianapolis. They had a little bit of a wobble on the opening day against Suriname, but after that, their bowling attack in particular was very sharp. You've got Nikhil Dutta, who's got the Caribbean Premier League contract in it, and as of now, reached out to Cricket Canada officials, and they confirmed that he still intends to come to Ireland and Scotland to play in this tournament. So he's, you know, getting a lot of confidence right now from playing that competition. You know, in his first match, he bowled Kevin Peterson with a gem, and he's going to be very key to their success. But then you've also got guys like Cecil Perez, who bowled very well in Indianapolis in the medium pace department, and Rizwan Chima, who is on a bit of a comeback himself. You know, he came on like a house on fire when he first came into international cricket, and then he went through a very long trough. And he's trying to dig himself out of that right now, and he's important at the top of the order for them, but also contributing overs of medium pace. And then another player who wasn't in Indianapolis but has been added, Jeremy Gordon, could be a big factor for them. If he, as a medium pacer, can take advantage of the conditions in Scotland, they added him in specifically for that reason after the tournament in Indianapolis ended. So the pace bowlers and just the bowling attack in general needs to show up, and the batting needs to be a little bit more disciplined. Somebody like Ravindra Gunasekara scored heavy in Indianapolis, but in almost every game he offered at least one chance. And whoever they were playing against, whether it was Suriname, Bermuda, USA, they couldn't hold on to the chances against him. So he scored, I believe, 3 half-centuries, but it very easily could have been out for single-digit scores in a lot of those games. And if you're coming up against more disciplined teams, more focused teams, better fielding teams overall in a tournament like this, those are the kind of things that Canada can't afford to have happen from the batting side.
Yeah, I think Gunasekara, very much a talented player. Jimmy Hansra is someone we can perhaps look at. He has a tendency of digging Canada out of a hole if they lose some early wickets. And you've got to look at Nitish Kumar as well. He's been playing some university cricket in England, so he's got some experience of the conditions. I think he's been playing for Loughborough University. Played a couple of first-class games for them earlier in the year. He scored a century, I think, against Kent. So he's got some experience and he's got a bit of form. He didn't play too well in Indianapolis, but he's a talented player, and with that experience in the conditions, that could well prove telling.
I think Kumar is a great example of somebody who is very talented, but kind of struggles from that lack of professional atmosphere overall in the USA and Canada, where some of the games he had in that tournament, he looked absolutely just sparkling. And then out of nowhere, he would play this absurd shot to get himself out, or he would dance down the wicket and get stumped. And you see him walking off the field, and you think to yourself, what just happened? That guy looked like he was set for 70 or 80, and instead he's out for 21 or, you know, something around that. And that kind of lack of mental focus at times spreads throughout the Canadian team and to a large extent the U.S. team as well. So they have talented players like that, and Hansra you mentioned as well, but it's a matter of application and match experience and match awareness to not be looking for the million-dollar shot every single ball.
And in terms of placing, it seems to me it's going to be incredibly difficult for Canada to get above fourth. It's and you'd have to expect that they wouldn't drop below sixth. So, but do they have the talent to push higher in the playoffs than that?
I wouldn't say so. I think fourth is probably the best they can hope for. I think they're looking at fifth or sixth, to be honest.
I think I'm a little bit more optimistic. I think they could finish as high as third if they get hot early. Again, it's a matter of kind of application and consistency. They've got some big hitters that other teams don't have. Someone like Hamza Tariq coming in at 5-6-7. He's kind of a floater in the middle order there. He's a very, very big hitter of the ball. Gunasekara, he's a big, strong, left-handed bat. He can hit the ball a long way. Those kind of players, some of the other teams don't really have, and those are kind of the X factors. But and obviously Rizwan Chima, if he's in a good mood at the top of the order, he's somebody who's a very, very dangerous player. But these guys, rather than coming off 4 matches out of 5 or 5 matches out of 6, they're coming off 1 match out of 6, that consistency isn't there, and that's what's holding them back. So I could see them finishing as high as third. I could also see them finishing as low as 6.
Sixth team in the group is Kenya. They're still a team. They've still got a fair bit of talent in this team, but they haven't managed to put it together for a number of tournaments now.
Yeah, I think it's a talented side, but a distinct lack of application. I think, as you see, to some extent, from some of the US and Canadian players, they're a side in a bit of flux, so they have been for a couple of years now. But I think they're going to really find this tournament a struggle. They did beat the UAE in a one-day game, but again, as we were saying earlier, they lost to Jersey in a T20, and I really don't see them doing particularly well in this tournament at all, to be honest. I think I could even see them going without a win.
I would second that view wholeheartedly. I think that they'll struggle. They've got a few guys who are... the team is building around in Irfan Karim and Rocket Patel, the captain, but some of their other performers and other players in recent years are kind of on the downswing, and a good case of kind of the inconsistency is the Odhiambo brothers, Nelson and Nehemiah. They're very talented. Those guys can bowl in the 135-140 range, but you don't see them taking a lot of wickets. Just the discipline in terms of their bowling and just the focus isn't always there. And when they come up against a weaker team like Oman, they could probably bowl them out for 70 or 80. But against some of the other teams in the group, like Afghanistan and Netherlands and Scotland, they could be facing a chase of 180, 190, 200. And I just don't envision them having a very good tournament.
Yeah, I'm not sure they have the depth in the batting either to keep putting on totals that are going to be competitive, given how much they're depending on Rakib Patel and a couple of others to score those runs. Finally, moving on to Oman, they seem obviously as the weakest team in this group. They've come out of the Asian qualifier, though, and managed to get over Malaysia and Singapore and a couple of other teams. So are they better than we think they are?
Perhaps not. I think, to some extent, a couple of teams in the other group, a lack of experience in European conditions could well tell. Although some of them, they did play in Ireland in the 2005 ICC Trophy, although they've had a bit of a player turnover since then. I think a lot will depend with how Zeeshan Maqsood bats. He's a very talented batsman, capable of making some big scores. A couple of years ago, he nearly made 200 in a one-day game, so he can put together some runs. But beyond him, there isn't too much to that batting lineup, and the bowling lineup isn't brilliant either. So yeah, I think Oman are battling it out for Kenya for the wooden spoon in that group.
Oman is a bit of a weird team. They've got some very very explosive hitters and some skilled bowlers, but they're kind of like a poor man's version of Afghanistan. If you can imagine Afghanistan having an implosion, maybe once in the group stage and coming off the other five times looking like world beaters, Oman is the flip side of that. One game, you could see them threatening in Afghanistan or a Scotland for a win, and then the other five games, they'll get bowled out for 60 or 70, and you think, wait a second, how did they challenge Scotland or Afghanistan for a win, and then they just got annihilated in the other games? It doesn't make any sense. So they're a team that's just very helter-skelter. They have a bowler by the name of Munis Ansari, who I saw in Bermuda in 2013 at Division III. And the umpires at the tournament, they nicknamed him Slinga Malinga, because this guy come in and just fired in there at 85, 90 miles an hour. Most players who were part of the U.S. team, who were especially of the West Indian background or former first-class players from Jamaica or Guyana or wherever, they always bat in their hats. They either bat in a floppy hat or a regular baseball cap. This is the first time I think I saw any of those guys wearing a batting helmet come out to bat, because this guy was absolutely fierce. The problem with him, though, is he's unfit. He comes in and he bowls 90 miles an hour, and after his second or third over, he's huffing and puffing, and his pace drops from 90 miles an hour to 75 or 80 miles an hour, because he's just overweight, and he's not fit to last very long. So if you can hang in there and see off his opening spell, his opening couple overs, you can feel comfortable and confident the rest of the game. If he bursts through with a couple wickets or four wickets or five wickets, you're in serious trouble. So he's a player who Oman looks to definitely in the field to really produce some magical performances for them. And if that happens, they could challenge for a few games, but it's not something that you would want to be putting a lot of hopes on.
Yeah, I think they're looking at, as I say, about 6th or 7th. I don't see them pushing for playoffs at all.
So to round up the group winner in this group, I've got Scotland down. I think they're probably just at home going to have the edge over Afghanistan and the Netherlands. But your guys' thoughts?
I'm going Afghanistan for the group winner here.
I've got Afghanistan also at the top. I think they're just too good. And as Andrew referenced before, they've got hands down the best pace attack and arguably the just best all-around bowling attack in general. And that's going to be a driver to their success.
Second and third?
Yeah, I've got Scotland and Netherlands for second and third. I think certainly Afghanistan, Scotland and Netherlands are the top three. So, yeah, I've got Scotland, Netherlands, second and third.
Ditto for me. I think Scotland in home conditions gives them the leg up in terms of finishing ahead of the Netherlands, but it could go either way. But as I've got them penciled in for second and Netherlands third.
I have the same three teams. Fourth, I'm not sure about, and I'm probably just going to plump for UAE on the basis that they have the recent decent play, and because their bowling impressed me more than I was expecting in the World Cup and that qualifiers.
Yeah, I have UAE in fourth place as well. I think as Canada perhaps have a chance, but I think UAE should just edge fourth place.
I've also got UAE fourth. The only thing I could see that may affect them more than the other teams is just the weather more than anything. Even though it is summertime, there's going to be a lot of games where it's going to be windy and chilly, and Canada, their players are a lot more experienced in those kind of conditions, playing throughout different climates in and around Canada and the U.S., and that could be a subtle thing, but a very important thing that potentially could put Canada above the UAE, but as of now, I've got UAE in fourth.
All right, we'll see how that goes. All three of us will be at the tournament various times, so it's a meet in person, hopefully.